and welcome to the third episode of Season 3 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 29th of March 2011, and in this episode we're going to talk about whether certain software needs to come with adults-only warning, and find out what we think about the next Ubuntu release, Nati Narwhal. We will, of course, cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, command line love, and go over your feedback. I'm Laura, and with me this week are... Laura!
Hello, how are you?
Hello, and what have you been doing this week?
I've upgraded to Nati this week, or upgraded to Unity. So it's been an interesting long week falling bugs. Well, we'll see how it goes. I'll give it another week or so and we'll see how it goes.
Cool. And thank you for joining us again, because Mark isn't here this week.
Thank you for having me.
Alan.
This is going to get too confusing. Yes, Laura. No, not you. That one.
And what have you been doing this week?
I've been filing bugs as well, actually.
On Nati.
Yes, I've got my desktop and my laptop are both running Nati. And I keep getting crashy things and stuff not working quite as it should.
You said something in the week about one bug leading to another bug.
Something crashed and I thought, right, I'll file a bug. I'll take a couple of minutes, I'll file a bug. And as I started filing a bug, something that I needed, like Firefox or whatever, crashed while I was trying to file that bug. And then I thought, well, I'll file that as a bug as well. And then whatever process that gathered the stuff to file that bug crashed. And I was like, no!
So Launchpad developers really like you right now.
Absolutely, yes.
And yeah, sounds like you're lacking them at the minute.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them are duplicates, luckily. So that's good. Other people have filed it as well. So
cool.
Excellent.
And Tony?
Yes?
What have you been doing this week?
Well, I've been trying and failing to encrypt a hard disk, so if anybody can provide me with an easy way of doing that so that we can do an off-site backup thing, that would be handy. Playing with an Android phone that Alan has lent me, and I went on a photo trip with Graham Binns.
Cool. And so, yes, I got really intellectual, and I played Cheese or Font.
What on earth is Cheese or Font?
Pretty much what it says. It's a website, and it displays the name of a cheese or a font, underneath has a button saying cheese and a button saying font. And there are about 250 of these in the database, and you can go through for as long as you can
stomach
it. And for each one, you go cheese or font, and I think I got 55% on about 50. It's not easy.
But obviously there are some obvious ones, like, you know, Wensleydell and Helvetica and stuff like that.
Yeah, probably. I didn't get to them.
They were all just really hard.
A lot of it was guessing. As you can tell, 55%.
Oh, man. So Tony's just finished answering the door.
Yeah.
It's a live show, everyone.
So, in which case, can I just say a little bit more? I had a really good photo trip with Graham Binns, the Launchpad developer, who we've interviewed on the show in the past. We went up north and we did some photography for a few days, and it was great fun. And thank you to Graham for organising all and sorting out all the practicalities.
Excellent.
Hopefully there's no more interruptions now. The phone will go off in 5 minutes. You watch.
And you've been playing with one of my phones.
I have been playing with one of your phones, yes. That you had in a drawer and said you didn't want anymore.
Well, it's Android. Why would I want that?
Exactly. So that said, you gave it to me, and it's been on charge pretty much constantly since to just keep it going. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting playing with these new modern fangled pieces of technology.
Have you made any phone calls on it?
Yeah, a couple. That bit seems to work okay. And okay. To be honest, most of the kind of application fangled angle stuff seems to work all right.
It's pretty so retro.
It's pretty slow at doing text messages. Actually, just loading the screen, your inbox or whatever they call it, you know, mm-hmm. shows you all your messages you've got queued up. That's pretty slow. But yeah, other than that, it's all right, I suppose.
How is the actual battery life?
Depending on what you're doing with it, but I get a couple of days out of it, and that's about
it's
it.
Not bad.
Well, apparently that's quite, you know, the standard for a smartphone is charge it every evening or whatever. But, you know, I'm used to a phone that lasts 3 or 4 days without a charge.
Yes. Yeah,
but that's just me. Right. Sorry, I missed a bit of that conversation. Has everybody said everything that they just said?
We talked about cheese or font.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't miss anything too important. Right. Oh, we better get on with it then.
Yes. I think so.
Hello. Honestly, I do know what I'm doing.
Okay, prove
it. I clearly don't. there's been a couple of bugs filed recently, and not surprising. And one of them's about the maturity ratings, or whether there should be maturity ratings for software, because people have done a search for applications and found stuff that possibly they might not want to show, I don't know, a child or someone at work or someone of a particular religious background.
This was in the new Unity interface where the search result is in big letters on the middle of the screen.
Yeah, someone searched for the word unattended to look at unattended backups. And there's an app called PornView, which happens to have an unattended mode. So the keyword unattended found an app that was probably inappropriate for that environment at the time.
Well, it's worth saying that the actual application is just a graphics viewer.
It is.
It doesn't have any inherently inappropriate content in it, it's other than if name. You quibble with the name.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not that, you know, Ubuntu is suddenly shipping, you know, inappropriate images.
No, we've been there and done that.
But yeah, it's just an application with a slightly sort of, you know, inappropriate name, perhaps.
Yes, and it's tricky because, you know, some people would say, well, we're all about freedom and you should, you know, you should be able to just show whatever. But we're also about trying to appeal to an awful lot of people around the world, and some of those people don't appreciate this kind of stuff in their face.
Yeah, and there are other people who are picking up on the fact that there's a Bible package of some sort as well, which could be inappropriate in
certain circumstances.
Certain circumstances that you were saying.
nicely done there, Tony. If you're in a devoutly religious country where, you know, everything is all about one particular religious sect, then it may be inappropriate to display lots of imagery of another religious group.
So where does the line come between what is just freedom and allowing people to package software and put it in and call it anything, you know, they want to in Ubuntu, and where does it come saying actually we've got to make a commercially acceptable distribution, a culturally acceptable distribution, and you know, therefore it should be as unoffensive or inoffensive as possible.
So what is it that MPT is proposing in this blueprint that I guess it's in response to those books?
So Matthew Paul Thomas, who works on the design team at Canonical, has started a blueprint, which is the start of the discussion process for implementing something that fixes this potential problem. And he's talking about having a rating system. Now, we already have ratings and reviews for applications, but only like a 1 to 5 stars, and you know, whether it's good or it only gives you an indication of whether an app is good or bad. It doesn't give you an indication of whether it's appropriate or not. And it doesn't give you an idea of whether it's rated, you know, R or 18 or whatever the, you know, software ratings are. It doesn't give you any of that.
Okay.
But is it just a case that maybe the name was actually just a wrongly named application? So if it had been named a proper name, it already would have been fine. There would have been no kerfuffle about the whole thing.
Yeah.
If it had been called, you know, Auto Image Show or something like that, then yeah, probably nobody would have said anything. Yeah, exactly.
Is it a case that sometimes we're a bit too PC that we could just kick up a fuss because of a name that people don't like or associate it with, you know?
It's tricky. I know some people would say, oh, it's, you know, political correctness gone mad, but actually, you know,
in that voice.
Yeah, almost certainly. But the fact is, we have a very diverse set of users. Mm. It's not just a bunch of blokes down the pub sharing a CD. We've got people in, you know, Muslim countries where they have very different ideals and very different ideas of what is appropriate. And I have a desktop PC that my 7-year-old daughter uses. So there's those are circumstances where it may be inappropriate.
And just giving a presentation at work and porn review pops up looks a bit dubious, especially if it's a work machine.
Completely. So then maybe we should look at probably checking and verifying the names of applications that go in. If it looks dubious, then kick into a rating. But
well, but now, then what right do we have to rename an application?
Well,
yeah, we could.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other option. It's free software, so, you know, submit a patch that changes it from whatever to Wibble.
To Auto Image Viewer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but then what about the Bible ones? You change them all to Very Old Book Viewer?
Well, I was going to say that, because even if
fiction
you...
Fiction or non-fiction?
Oh. Even if you had, say, like a self-rating thing where the application developer said what it was, well, something like, something that wasn't suitable for children, say game, then it's probably fairly obvious that it's maybe a 15 or an 18 or something.
Fairly obvious to whom?
To the developer. I mean, it depends whether they comply or not, but there's a point at which you're probably like, yeah, okay, I'd probably say that's an adult content. So you've got a fair stab at whether they get that right for everybody or not. But something like the Bible or equivalent books, the people, it's only going to be offensive to certain people, not necessarily by age. And I don't know how you do that. And the people who develop, say, a Bible or a similar app are going to want the biggest audience they can. And it's not going to be offensive.
Yeah. And many developers would probably say, I don't want to rate my app, you know, because I personally think this application is appropriate for everyone. The world should be reading the Bible. You know, the world should be viewing porn or whatever it is that the app does.
Yeah.
PornView
doesn't view porn necessarily, by the way.
Yes.
And if it's a case that you bring somebody else to review somebody's application, they might take offense at, well, okay, my app is super for everybody, but according to people who have never met me, don't know me, are now reviewing my app and telling me it's over 15s, you're going to maybe decrease the level of applications being put forward for the software center.
Well, luckily, maybe. Yes, that's true. I mean, at the moment we're talking about apps that we've just pulled from Debian. Mm-hmm. So that these aren't apps that have been explicitly submitted to the software center. But in the future, we will have more apps that are explicitly submitted to the software center. And those developers, might think twice about, you know, whether they want to submit them.
And obviously we want a diversity. We want people to use the software center. So, if we start rating them and telling people what we don't like and we do like about their application names, then they might not actually submit any in the future.
Mm.
There's gaming industry standard rating scheme for games that has been for a few years. They can say whether it's 15 or 18 or whatever it is. And it's entirely voluntary, and it's based against a written standard of what is acceptable and what isn't. Is there any reason why something like that couldn't work for Ubuntu?
I guess one thing could be cultural differences. So I was thinking, like, even at the level of, say, we're happy to talk about 15 and 18s, whereas America is R, and, you know, there's those differences. Yeah. But then the criteria for each of those was probably very different in certain different countries.
Yeah, a recent film, what's it called, The King's Speech, with all the swearing taken out, as I understand it, was rated with a higher rating in the US than with all the swearing left in the UK. It was a lower rating.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, there are cultural differences. And how do we do that? When you're installing or when you're running the software center, do we have a set of checkboxes that says, perform a census and say, I am the following. I am American. I am religious. I
promise I'm over 18.
Like, yeah, exactly. All of that. You know, how are you going to be able to convey, or do you default it all on? Do you default the maximum filtration on day one, and then the user has to go in and switch all this stuff off in order to get access to, all the software?
I guess that,
And if you've got multiple users or different people switching on and off the machine, what do you do then? Do you say the default for the main user?
Yeah, because I could be one user and I could install some software. Yeah. Because at the moment, one of these bugs that we're talking about, actually, the user types in a word, like unattended, and the application that they're opposed to isn't even installed. It's popped up as a prompt to say, here's a piece of software that matches your criteria that you might want to install. And
yeah, so
it's not even
detected
on the machine, and it's popping up. Whereas if I installed that app and, Ubuntu switches that feature off, then even if I install it and you use my machine and you search for the word, it will pop up for you. So, yeah, it's going to have to be user-specific.
Yeah. But then maybe some of it comes back to parental controls and maybe just an extension of that so that, as you say, you get it and then you choose what you do and don't want.
Yeah, I guess, well, the tricky thing is with parental controls, we had this discussion when I was looking at setting up email for my daughter, because I figured that sometime she's going to want to email people, although arguably she won't. She'll go on Facebook and then never have an email address. Nobody will ever email her. That aside, I had a lot of comments on my blog from various people saying, you shouldn't let her near a computer. And then we had people at the other end of the scale saying, what are you doing censoring what she can see online? And I fall, somewhere in the middle, kind of...
Wet liberal, are you?
Yeah, exactly.
And... Okay, so if it had been your 7-year-old daughter and she was typing something like it, unattended in for some bizarre reason into the search thing, and it came up with the PornView application, what would your immediate kind of response be? Would you think that's inappropriate?
Burn the computer. I would be super extreme.
Mac OS.
No, I would... I don't know, it depends if she asked me. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you're sat around watching telly and the whole family's watching telly and then some awkward thing comes on the telly.
And everyone goes
and
quiet.
And everyone goes quiet. And it's like, the kid goes, "Mummy, what are they doing?" And, you know, it's only if they ask. Or you feel the need to educate them on this particular, "Oh, now, what you can see here, what's popped up on the screen there?"
Oh, right,
you know,
okay.
Are you going to go down that road, you know, when you're watching the film and it's Christmas Day and it's all awkward? "Now, do you see what they're doing now?" And then, like, explain it to them. It depends on context, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It will come down to, like, some games or applications are going to be easily classified, and the likes of, say, a Bible or religious areas aren't going to be easily classified. Mm. And there, I guess, you know, people are just going to need to respect that and understand that and understand that it cannot be classified.
Yeah, we get a lot of respect and in people in religious circles respecting each other's points of views, don't we?
Right. Well, you know, sometimes people just need to grow up as well.
Yes.
It's interesting to me that you could actually resolve the porn view aspect of the problem by just, you know, changing its name to Wibble or something.
Yeah.
But you can't as easily resolve the religious texts or, you know, the inclusion of religious things that some people say and they found offensive and stuff. Even if you would want to be as inclusive as possible and have all the various different texts in there, that's liable to offend even more people than not having any in there. And even if they're not shipping by default, they're just in a repository online.
And then there's even further than that. There's software, we've discussed this before, that some software produces error messages on the screen, which are inappropriate.
Oh, yeah, like I remember that.
Pulse Audio, for example. If there's already a copy of Pulse Audio running and you run another copy, there's something that happens on the screen that I can't say. And I filed a bug about it, and the author just said, "Stop wasting my time." So... okay, so what we can do is patch that out and say, look, we don't want that kind of message appearing on the screen.
In Ubuntu, you mean?
In Ubuntu, yeah. I mean, they can carry that upstream. We have to carry that patch all the time.
Mm.
And then how many... that's just one occasion. How many packages are we going to have to carry patches for to sanitize? We're going to turn into Apple and completely sanitize the whole... some people would say we already are turning into Apple. sanitize the whole environment and restrict what people can see. And that's surely not what we're about.
No, but then we're not just making a product for our own amusement. There is a commercial element to Ubuntu. And
no.
There is, I know. And, you know, they want it to be available in as many markets or you know, at least... yeah, not restricted from being in certain markets as possible. And, you know, I would much rather that, you know, everybody had access to Ubuntu than, you know, whole countries decided that they couldn't allow people to use it, or it was a problem to use it because there were certain packages installed. But I just have a worry about the freedom of speech aspect, which is that, you know, if somebody wants to make an application centred around a religious text... fine,
but there's nothing stopping them doing that, and they can have a personal, you know, PPA thing, or so people can still get it. But I mean, this came out of that search, didn't it? One of these bugs was the on-screen search,
mm-hmm.
and one of the solutions was to block out non-installed packages,
yes.
and that kind of solved the problem.
Yes,
didn't it?
It does, but you've reduced the functionality. One of the nice things about Unity is, you know, I could type in Chromium, even though Chromium isn't installed by default. I could type in, you know, do me a search for Chromium. Oh, it's not installed, but it is listed on that screen as something I could install, and I just hit the button, and it takes me to the screen where I installed it. And you know, if you take that away, you're actually degrading the user experience.
It's like not enabling the checkbox on the installer, isn't it?
And in fact, not many people have complained about this particular feature. It's not like it's a celebrity... well, it's kind of a celebrity bug now we're talking
it
about.
Is.
But it's not like there's a bazillion duplicates of that bug. Yeah. There's just like one guy saying, hey, this is probably inappropriate.
Maybe we just need to tweak the description for some of those packages so they don't show up quite as readily in searches.
Mm.
That might solve it.
Android doesn't have this issue, does it? Android on the market?
Yeah, there's lots of apps in there that you
but there isn't
you
the same contentious
not...
issue. There isn't, you know, Android is everywhere, and there isn't the same contentious issue that bugs are being filed for renaming applications.
No, that's a fair point. But then, where would you file bugs in Android?
Well, yeah.
If you let me know, we'll find out.
Well, if you've got any thoughts on that, why not email us, podcast@ubuntu-uk.org, or get in touch with us via all the other mechanisms you can find out at the end of the show. Thank you.
A US company has been awarded a contract to develop software for the military that will allow users to create and control multiple online personas in order to spread pro-American propaganda through social media. While critics have likened this to China's attempt to restrict free speech, a spokesman for the military said it's only intended to counter violent extremist propaganda.
Yeah, this is a bit weird.
Yeah, it is a bit strange.
It's a bit... All these kind of robotic people cropping up on Facebook saying, I think the current policies of the administration are top hole, yeah, and they are very sensible.
It does sound a bit implausible.
Yeah. Isn't this a bit similar to what we already have, internet trolls? You just go online just to wind people up and say something that's pretty much completely contrary to what they really think, just to get a rise out of people.
Maybe they'll just employ those people.
Oh, you think it's a honey trap?
No, it just seems odd. Just
no, I just think we've already got it. I don't think they need to recruit or... have a whole department for it. We've already got them. There are wackos out there already.
Yes.
Microsoft has launched a case against Barnes & Noble over patent issues with the Android OS used on its Nook ebook reader. Microsoft claims to own patents covering a variety of the user interface features in Android and cites that previous licensing deals with HTC prove these to be valid. Oh dear.
Patent
here we go.
Wars, the patent wars. Everybody's going to fight in the patent wars.
Yeah.
Well done.
It's all right.
That is so tiresome, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Really?
Another yeah. whole heap of legal stuff to...
And none of it gets resolved now.
No.
It'll just like find out in like 5 years' time that they settled out of court and nobody will ever know the details.
Slowing down the pace of progress.
Yes.
Google have announced the organisation's acting as mentors for this year's Summer of Code, in which Google sponsors students to work on open source projects. This year's participants include Moodle, brackets, yay, close
Mark
brackets.
Mark wrote
that. Right.
Blender, StatusNet, which is the software behind Identica, and pretty much any other open source project or software foundation worth mentioning.
Mm.
Good old Google.
Yeah. Mm.
Also, Firefox 4 has been released, sporting a host of speed improvements, a refreshed interface, and increased support for new web technologies, such as HTML5. Mozilla have also announced that Firefox will be changing to a Chrome-style development model, allowing new features to make it into a stable release much more quickly. They plan to release Firefox's 5, 6, and 7 by the end of the year.
Are they not just all heading for a nervous breakdown?
I presume that Firefox's 5, 6, and 7 will have... not as many new features as the previous major.
Well, well, with Chrome, I never noticed, like, what...
Yeah.
What's, no. And it just suddenly... We're on what? Chrome 308? You know, it's just...
Yeah,
it's sort of
6 monthly or something, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know. It just updates on its own, and I have no idea, but it does it, and it works.
Yeah.
And Firefox 4 works as well. It's quite nice.
Cool. I haven't tried it yet.
The UK government has launched a survey on open standards in order to shape a strategy to make their systems more open, cheaper and better connected. The survey invites users to recommend or warn against adoption of standards for everything from office documents to web services.
Ooh, this is exciting. No, it's a really good opportunity to have some input, I guess, into what public sector and the government could use for software and the support it could give its use in business.
Hmm.
There you go.
Yeah. Just like,
Laura just
let's just
shrugs.
Blown away that.
Yeah. She's just astounded by that.
Yeah.
Google has announced that Honeycomb, the tablet-focused version of Android, will not be open source when the first devices ship. The reasons given were that Honeycomb is designed for tablets. It won't transfer well to phones in its current form. Quite why this is a problem when there's already an open source version of Android available for phones isn't clear.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah,
Honeycomb.
Honeycomb is version 3, the tablet-y kind of looking Android. Not the one you've got on that phone.
I was thinking of Crunchy Bars.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, they're all named after sweeties, aren't
okay.
they? But yeah, some people have got up in arms about the fact that the whole open source Android, and it's not.
Okay.
Not yet.
But it never started out open source, did it?
Well, Google have always developed internally and thrown it over the wall to the open source community. But then, you know, they're doing that again.
They continue.
Fancy that.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Laura CZ, you're going to tell us about an event.
I am. A Natty Norwell launch event. You've heard it here first. Thursday, April 28th, the day before the royal wedding, starting with a slightly different formal event in the BCS. It may be possibly invitation only, but there will be more information coming up shortly. There's going to be a wild night followed by a pub afterwards, and Alan Bell is looking for suggestions of where to go after the launch party.
A wild night at the BCS.
Well, after, I think that... Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah.
That's central London.
Well, it sounds like fun. Yes. Hopefully the BCS are they giving us food or something?
That hasn't been
engaged. Hasn't been finalised just yet.
That is just me speculating entirely.
Put pressure on them, yes.
Absolutely. Go on, BCS. I pay my membership. And that's all the events. Okay, we've got a command line love this time, and it's based around Gwibber. And there's a tweak in Gwibber that Alan's going to tell us about, which is apparently Gwibber is spying on what you say. Is that, have I read that right?
Well, maybe not spying, but storing. It's storing okay. all of your tweets and dents in a little database in your home directory, and it grows. The reason I found out about this was because I saw a bug get filed by a guy. I think a guy from Turkey, and he follows 17,000 people on Twitter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
And he uses Gwibber.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I know.
And it works?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Yeah. Those were exactly my reactions when I read the bug report.
That's wow. kind of extreme social networking.
It is, yes.
17,000. But he's using Gwibber, so it's got to be good.
Yes, absolutely.
And it works.
But the problem was that after a while it became unbearably slow. And it turns out that one of the reasons why it's unbearably slow is that there's this SQL-like database that stores all the tweets you've ever seen in your Gwibber window back in time. It's pretty useless, really, because if you scroll down the Gwibber window, it's not like you can scroll down to the beginning of time. You only get to see the last, like, 100 tweets or something. So it's kind of pointless doing it.
And there's no automatic clean up on it by
there isn't yet, but I believe Ken Van Dyne, who is the maintainer for Gwibber in Ubuntu, is implementing a feature to kind of clean that up, but I went the brute force way and I've written a little one line script that basically just deletes every tweet and dent and Facebook message from inside that database. So yeah. it took mine was 427 meg.
It's not insignificant, is it?
No. And this guy who follows 17,000 people, his was like 1.5 gigabytes of SQL-like database.
And that's like everybody else's tweets and dents.
Yeah, everything
it's not just
you see.
Your own.
Yeah. God, if he's generated 1.5 well, gig of tweets, man.
Well, he's got a lot of people to keep in touch with.
Well, yeah, clearly. A lot of people to retweet, yes. So all this one line does is just delete all of the tweets and dents in the database, and then it does a Hoover, a vacuum in the database, and that's it. And the way you do it is you shut down Gwibber, run this command, start Gwibber up, and it's all nice, fresh and clean and tidy and runs better.
It's similar to the Firefox trick, the Firefox performance trick, which kind of cleans up the database.
Yeah, that was more of just a fact, because I think that does actually internally clear stuff out.
Mm.
But you still get fragmentation in the database. So, and that vacuum is supposed to reduce the fragmentation, whereas this line actually just ditches all the data and then vacuums. So mine went down from 427 meg to 9 kilobytes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And did the...
Well, that's deleting all your data.
Oh, yeah, so sure. Yeah,
just in case you're unclear about it.
The reason
why that's impressive is because I have no data anymore.
It goes from something to nothing.
To nothing.
Right. Yeah. Did it improve the performance?
Yes.
Okay.
Of Gwibber?
Yes.
Okay.
Completely, yeah.
So it'd be worth running this every, I don't know, week or month or something?
Yeah.
It'd be better still if Gwibber did it itself.
That'd be good. File a bug.
Can't argue with that one. Okay, and that's the command line love.
Oh, Natty Narwhal.
Narwhal.
It's an odd word. Natty Narwhal.
It's an odd creature.
It's easier to say than the next one.
What's the creature?
A narwhal.
A narwhal.
It's a whale with a, like, it's a unicorny whaley thing with a thing coming out of its nose.
A real one animal, then.
Yeah, for once it's a real animal, yes.
Okay, so I'd never seen it until about an hour and a half ago. Who here has tried it?
Yeah.
Yes.
You spent all week, Laura, filing bugs on it.
Yeah, it's not bad. And I'm sure over time I will get used to it, but there's some pet peeves in it for me at the moment. It really gets on my...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alan?
Yeah. Sandy, what would you say it's not bad? That really is damning it with faint praise. It's not bad, I suppose. You know, it's like changing the whole user interface of the desktop.
Yeah.
And that's probably why
it's not bad.
I think that's probably why it's not bad at present, because there's so many little narky little bits. So, like, when I go to shut down, you automatically go to shut down the system settings for no particular reason, just there.
At the bottom of the menu where you normally see shut down.
And you go, why do I want to hit system settings? And the really annoying pet peeve I have today is that I upgraded to Natty, launch Chrome as I usually do, and all my passwords are gone on my settings. And every time I click a link in IRC, it defaults to Firefox. Firefox was never, ever my default.
So yeah, there's a few teething troubles.
But, and I really, really dislike the Ubuntu One logo.
You don't like the Ubuntu One logo?
No, it looks odd. Like a bit of piece of paper is being ripped outside of it. So it just looks... I know once I talk to somebody, explain that the one is inside the U, but it just looks like a piece of paper has been ripped from the side.
You don't like that, do you?
No, I don't like that.
Okay, it's not tidy. No, I understand.
Tony, have you seen it at all?
No, I haven't. I've been interested to hear all your views, because it is a really... It's probably the biggest change, I suspect.
In apart from the buttons.
Nothing compared to this.
probably the biggest change in the Ubuntu interface since it started. Certainly the biggest change between one release and the next.
Well, every release has had a bar at the top and the bottom.
Yeah.
And clock in the top right, and your menu the top places there. System. Yeah, that's been there for 4 or 5 years. Or more.
And no more, because it's going away.
Well, not completely, because the thing about Natty is that when you log on, when you get the logon screen, you can actually choose. And by default, you'll get the new Unity interface, but also on the desk is the old two-panel GNOME setup. So you can log into the old setup if you prefer that.
Okay, so that's good. So if people really struggle, they can go back.
Yes.
But given... that a lot of people like to use the default because it's the default.
The default.
Mm-hmm. How are people found... Sorry, Laura's laptop's making a huge racket over there.
Sorry.
Nothing to do with Natty.
You say
no,
that.
It is just...
Remember that Mandrake release that managed to kill CD drives, and maybe we're done. Natty kills laptops. Yeah, so you've got the menu bar down the left-hand side as part of Unity.
The launcher. There's lots of new terminology coming in.
Yes, okay. The launcher down the left-hand side.
Yes.
Which is the thing that makes all
the thing with lots of buttons that people traditionally call a dock.
Like what Mac has across the bottom.
Yes.
But on the side.
But it's at the left-hand
legally
side.
Legally different.
Yes.
Because it's along the side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not,
And it's not movable.
It's vertical, not horizontal.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's the launcher.
Okay.
And there's buttons down there for the stuff that you use regularly. Well,
now, do
the
you choose you put, those?
Well, there's some pre-filled, like Firefox Tomboy and stuff like that. But yeah, you can pin stuff to that.
Okay.
So if you've got an app open, you can say, I use this all the time, and you can right-click it and say, keep it there. And then it'll always be there on the right, on the left-hand side for you.
Okay, and that serves as a launcher then. If the app's not running, it will launch it. If it's running, it brings it up.
That's the other difference.
It shows in that panel what's running. Then you get a little tiny kind of arrowhead notch thing at the side of it. And if you've got multiple windows of it open, you get multiple notches on the side.
Okay, so...
It's a bit like a status bar. Not a... Yeah, the bottom.
Dock.
So... Okay, so what have people been saying about that? Is it?
Well, it's different.
Yeah,
and that's the key thing.
That's a big change, isn't it?
It's a big change, and a lot of people don't like it because it's a big change. Some people, very early on, before any code had been released for this Natty, said, "I don't like it. It's rubbish," and that was based on the Unity interface that was in the last release, 10.10.
Right.
And that was a completely different code base.
Right.
It had similar features like, a launcher down the side and all that kind of stuff, but it was very different. This version is implemented as a plugin for Compiz.
Right.
So you have a composited desktop, a 3D composited desktop to do the like zooming in and out and all the like groovy stuff, and Unity is a plugin for that.
So if people tried it in the last release, didn't like it very much, they should really give it a go on Natty.
Yeah, why not?
Because it's significantly different.
Yeah. I wouldn't dismiss it based on the experience that people have had in 10.10.
And the other thing we've got is something called the BFB, which it says in my notes stands for Big Freaking Button.
Yeah, it's an affectionate name for the Ubuntu logo in the top left-hand corner.
Okay.
There's some other operating system that has a logo in the top left-hand corner.
Yeah, fruit-based thing.
Yeah, the fruit-based thing in the top left-hand
corner.
It's like that. Yeah, it's like that.
Okay, and that does what?
Lets you get to applications and files, and it's basically how you get to everything from
Okay.
So anything that's not listed in the launcher on the left-hand side, and also some stuff that is, you just hit that button. So it's right. like it's like the how do I get to anything? That button.
It's like the button the on your button. Netbook release, isn't it? Only that's smaller then.
Oh, that's a fair point. That's a very good point. Yeah. I'll get it. I've got Easy Peasy running on my netbook, and that has a little picture of a lemon.
Right.
Yes. Because
it's Easy Squeezy Lemon Peasy. and that sort of shows me the desktop and minimises all the applications and hides them. Right. That
this running. Just does an overlay thing on the top, which they used to be called places, but I think they're now called lenses. That's called a lens. Okay.
It's just the whole new naming thing as well. It's just like, seriously, who came up with lenses?
But who's going to who's going to use it as well? Because it's not like it's labelled on screen.
No,
how do you mean who's going to use it?
Who's going to refer to it? Who's a new user going to call it a lens?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been using it for weeks, and I had no idea what it was called.
Doesn't really matter, does it?
Well,
does if you're talking to somebody, if you're giving a bug report.
That's true.
Yeah.
Or talking about it, they all refer to things as lenses. I'm like, seriously, what are you talking about?
That's true.
Yeah. But also from a user point of view, you know, if I was trying to explain to my mum, open the lens, like, what? You know, the big black splodge on the screen, that thing.
She's there trying to put her contacts back in.
So, Alan, you said earlier when you were giving me a tour that there's a whole new philosophy around.
Well, I'm not sure it's a philosophy or more of a an idea that you don't have loads of windows overlapping all over the place.
Mm.
And that everything should be full screen.
Yeah.
Because there's two reasons for that. One, it focuses your attention. And secondly, you get the maximum desktop real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So for a laptop, like my laptop is a 1280 by 800, 800 vertically. And I've got almost all of that 800 vertical for whatever app, because there's only one panel across the top.
Yeah.
It's not like the old one where I had a panel on the bottom. And even Firefox in this version doesn't have a status bar. And lots of the app developers have trimmed down the Chrome that goes around their app.
Mm.
So there's less stuff on the screen to take away from the content.
So didn't PC computing really take off when Windows 3.1 came out and you could start moving lots of windows around the screen?
Yeah, and have loads of overlapping stuff.
Yeah.
But you can still... You can have workspaces, can't you? So mm-hmm. you can have a workspace with one application or set of applications. If you're a developer, maybe you've got like a terminal and a couple of editors.
Yeah,
or something.
Mark was saying he has everything full screen on a separate desktop.
Yeah, and then switches between it depending if he's looking at his email, development, web, or whatever's going on.
I used to do that as well. And in fact, I don't know why I'd... Oh, I know why, because Compiz was a bit unreliable for the last couple of releases, that's why.
No, I do that. Like, I leave one desktop for my Quibber, one desktop for IRC, and it'll keep doing mail and actually proper work. So I mean, like, I don't always have to look at Quibber, which is good. I don't always have to look at IRC, which means I can actually look at my work desktop.
And I guess having the notifications means you can leave your email on a different workspace over, you know, over there, gesturing somewhere over there, and Quibber on another one. And, you know, whatever other applications that might give you notifications, like Instant Messenger. And you just get the little pop-up. And then when you need to, you can switch
click
that
back
and
forth.
You know,
it does work out pretty well. It is not bad. It just will take getting some used to. I had to boot into the GNOME desktop the last day to use a print screen because my print screen stopped working because it doesn't focus properly. So there are some little pet peeves, which, if they were ironed out, it would be nice. But at present, they're not fully ironed out.
Yeah, there's still plenty of bugs in it. I mean, I last night, I think I filed four.
Launchpad must really love you right now.
In one go. And some of them, over the last 24 hours, have been duplicated. So they're bugs that they already knew about. So there's plenty of
people. It also means that there's more and more people testing it as well, which is good because that means we'll have a more stable release. So the likes of Ubuntu Global Jam coming up, if more and more people are testing Natty, then we'll have more feedback and get all these bugs ironed out now.
Mm.
So it's a good opportunity to give it a go, file some bugs if you find them, and then hopefully the Global Jam will...
Now's probably the best time to do it. It's a lot more stable now. I mean, I still get, like, while we've been recording Compiz has crashed twice.
Yeah.
But it's not crashed in such a catastrophic way that I've lost anything. It's just all the windows get thrown around the screen for a few seconds, and then it all comes back.
Right.
So we've got a month left until release.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's not that long to go, really, is it? Because it's going to be 11.04, and it's 11.03 now.
Yes.
And
Ubuntu,
for another 2 days.
And Ubuntu Global Jam is on this weekend, so there's a lot of people around the world taking part in the event, and hopefully taking part in doing bugs and logging them and testing it, so we'll get a lot of feedback.
Well, one of the people who's listening live to us and commenting in Ubuntu-UK-podcast in the Freenode IRC channel is Tom Bragg, who says that he's unhappy, basically. There's still no way to launch another instance of an application from the launcher.
Yeah, there is.
You've already got one running. And Alan is now going to school Tom in how to do so.
Listen here, Tom. What you have to do is middle click.
That's just obvious.
Yeah, duh.
I couldn't even find the middle click button on your mouse.
It's the big one in the middle.
Yeah.
So if you imagine you've got this launcher down the left-hand side, if you single left-click on an icon and that application's not already open, it will open that application. If you click it again, it just switches to that application. If you right-click, a little menu appears that lets you keep that in the launcher. But if you middle-click, it opens another instance of whatever that app is. So if you want a second Firefox window or something, you middle click it and you get a new one.
It'd be useful if the right click included an option to say open another window or something.
Yeah.
Like people used to right click it. Yeah.
Like open new tab in a browser does.
I think they're really trying to trim these down. I mean, you can't even right click properties one of these. So for example, the Firefox one, I like to have some command line parameters on my Firefox to tell it to pop up a dialogue and ask me which profile I want to use. And I know Mark uses that feature a lot as well, because a web developer has lots of Firefox profiles. But you can't actually maintain those. And I filed a bug about it saying there's no way for me to right-click properties. And Mark replied, no, we don't want that. No, Mark Shuttleworth replied, no, we don't want that. So the only way to maintain that is editing a .desktop file somewhere.
Surely that's not good enough for end users.
Well, the argument is, how often would you edit the command line for any of these applications?
If you're an end user.
End users are web developers as well.
Yeah, and web developers can do these things. So you're really
Not necessarily Linux admins.
No, true, yeah.
So you're really kind of telling your users what way you want them to do things from now on, which I don't really think is good enough to tell them that they can't do it anymore.
Well, that's always been a kind of gnomish way of doing things. We'll remove this button. You don't need that.
Well, one of the comments I had, I was talking to Laura's mum earlier in the week, and she has been using Ubuntu, Ubuntu desktop, as was, and had been trying out Unity. Now, I'm not 100% sure whether she was trying out Natty or whether she was trying out the version.
It was Maverick, because I don't think it looks quite the same.
It's changed a lot.
But she said she found it very difficult to sort of move from one to the other. She found the default GNOME desktop quite intuitive to use. She was easy enough for her to find what she wanted to do, get on with stuff. But the change into Unity was a bit disconcerting.
I'm quite looking forward to giving this to my mum, because I go around there and I see 20 copies of Chrome running down at the bottom of the screen. Okay. And I think that one thing, that she's got 20 copies of Chrome, would be eradicated by this, because when she clicks on the button for Chrome, it would switch to Chrome. It wouldn't open a new one.
So is she going to have to learn to use tabs rather than just starting another instance of
Chrome? Oh, she already has tabs. Okay. She already does do tabs.
So she's got 20 instances of Chrome, each with a dozen tabs in.
Yeah. But
she's doing what you do in Unity, where you just click it and it brings it back rather than starting it afresh.
Yeah, at the moment she's starting a new one each time, and you don't really want that.
Yeah, well, my mum uses Windows 7 a lot. She's got this is just on a netbook, the Ubuntu, so she's used to Windows 7 and is quite happy with that.
Mm. There are some similarities between this and Windows 7.
Okay,
apparently there are some people complaining that it's difficult to middle click on a laptop without.
It is really difficult. I just tried this second. I can't middle click.
I don't know how to.
You've got a ThinkPad. You've got a middle button right there.
Oh, yeah.
In between the other two buttons. That third one.
I really don't like
this
pad.
And on some laptops, it's actually three fingers does a middle click.
Okay.
So two does a right and three does middle.
Well, while Laura is trying to work that out and shaking her fist at her laptop, if you've got any
swearing,
absolutely. If you've got any thoughts about Natty or the new Unity interface in general, please send them in podcast@ubuntu-uk.org or all the normal places.
It's time for the Bit About Ubuntu Ecosphere, Gerald.
Hey! Bit About Ubuntu.
Yeah. And the first one, we mentioned last time that bug had been filed asking for the tick box on the installer to be default on.
Yes.
To do MP3 and all that
Flash
kind of stuff.
And all the evil stuff, yeah.
And the Ubuntu technical board had a meeting this week and unanimously decided against implementing that change.
Aha, uh-huh. So that means it's not going to be on by default.
That's right.
It's still
not
be there.
In this release. In this release. It's not going to be ticked by default. The option will still be there, so a user can still tick it to, you know, install Flash and MP3 stuff, but not by default.
And everybody's favourite bearded community wrangler, John O'Bacon's made a blog post in which he sort of talks about that. And
yeah, he's trying to he's trying to solicit suggestions for how we can improve that process, whether we should do it differently. And, you know, people have come up with mock-ups of a slider and, you know, how we... I was thinking personally of a great big dial that goes from 0 to 11. Free to evil, yeah. 11 is maximum evil.
You could get like a little illustration that morphed from a sort of an angelic face.
Yeah.
No, from Richard Stallman to Mark Shuttleworth.
Or Steve Jobs.
Yes.
Okay, that sounds like a sensible plan. For a happier future. There's been a new Creative Commons licensed Ubuntu webcomic launched called Ubuntu Bytes, which you can find at ubuntubytescomic.blogspot.com.
Yes.
I think we've got up to episode 5 so far, which is pretty good going.
It's that's made by someone who just recently got their Ubuntu membership at one of the recent membership board meetings.
Things.
Yeah. Someone who also runs a website called I Heart Ubuntu.
Aww.
Well, it's good, you know, it's another good thing that people can contribute that isn't, you know, development, isn't coding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, advocacy comics. And amusement. But is it funny?
I've only seen the first couple. I've just seen the fact that they've got to number 5 on this browser and I can't see it from here. I'm sure it's very good.
That's not what you said before we started recording.
That's harsh, Laura.
The DEX project has been launched, aimed at getting developments from Debian derivatives, including Ubuntu, into the upstream distro. The Ubuntu team can be found in /ubuntu-debian on IRC.
Mm. Good bit of collaboration there.
Mm. Is this something that... the community team are working with Jono and George and
I think it's more of a
Daniel.
I think Matt Zimmerman and Stefano. I can't remember his name.
DPL.
Yeah, the DPL, the Debian project lead, works out. Yes, and okay. I believe there's going to be other groups building on this, other downstreams from Debian, going to use this as well.
All the ones that are no longer downstreams of Ubuntu.
Now, yeah.
Now downstreams of Debian.
Gave up on us and
Crunch
switched
Bang
to
Mint and all that sort of stuff.
All of those, yes. Yeah.
Fair enough.
The colour palette for the console has been modified to make it easier on the eyes. The screen of death blue that used to be the background in the text mode installer will now be aubergine.
Yes.
Ooh. By the way, Ubuntu people no longer say purple. Aubergine.
So, how is that easier on the eyes?
Not easier to say.
That blue. The blue just smacks of DOS.
Yeah.
It like,
or
I
Windows.
Think in Dustin Kirkland, who's the guy driving this this change, who likes to pretty up consoles, he's the same guy who did Boyobu, the thing down the bottom. He said, you know, it smacks of MS-DOS and Windows 3.1 installer, which is like a blue DOS screen.
Yeah, and I remember it well.
Yeah, it looks like that. So now we've got this nice purple. And it does look quite nice, but...
Is it still going to be a light font, white or something, on top of the aubergine?
Well, it's the, you know, the alternate installer where you've got like a red screen in the middle with the white buttons and then behind that is all blue. That's all now aubergine.
Okay, so the red bit is still red?
Yeah.
Okay.
So red on aubergine?
Or is it? I can't remember. Maybe, well, I don't know. Try it.
Well, you know, in a few years' time, we'll switch back to the blue because it's retro.
Yes. You see, I've never had a particular problem with it because it's the server release. It's going to be server people who are probably going to install it who...
Don't care about colour? Are probably using a KVM that's black and white only?
Maybe, yeah. You know, and you see it for, I don't know, 20 minutes while you do an install.
Have no taste, probably wear glasses, are in a darkened room, all these kind of stereotypes.
Tony's a server person, doesn't wear glasses.
This is very true. Yeah. I'm the only one in my team of 8 who doesn't.
Maybe they work harder.
Oh, harsh. Yeah. Okay, what's next? Moving on rapidly.
Oh, that would be me.
Yes.
The Ubuntu Technical Board also, since we last recorded, have been looking to improve responses to questions from the user community on the Ubuntu Brainstorm website. So they've identified a whole bunch of questions which seem to be pretty common fundamental questions, and they've sent messages out to developers who work in those particular areas and asked the developers, actually, you know, forcibly told the developers, please go to Brainstorm and right. answer this question as fully as you possibly can.
Okay.
Because at the moment, it seems to be that Brainstorm is mostly a bunch of community people all arguing about what the best way to do something is, and not necessarily the developers arriving and saying, hang on a minute, that's not a good idea, or we can't do that for this reason, or we could do that for whatever reason.
Are things from Brainstorm still regularly harvested and taken note of?
Define regularly.
Ever?
Probably about once every 6 months.
Okay. And they look
coinciding with the UDS.
Right, so they look at the top suggestions and then maybe say, oh, maybe do this one, maybe we won't do that one.
Yeah,
I think with the likes of the technical board now doing this as well, it means that actually more and more Brainstorm ideas may possibly get it recognition. But on top of that, it also would answer people. They finally get an answer to their question, which is good. Yeah. And I'm really impressed with the technical board, the way they are doing stuff at the moment. They're one of the really good councils I'm well impressed with.
Yeah, and we talked earlier about them turning down the freedom, I was hating software option in
but
the
But at least they're answering and they're taking part in the community, they're listening to people. Yeah. And, you know, that's a hard decision. It's being blogged about and tweeted about and dented about, but they're there, they're willing to take questions and answers, and that's pretty good.
So can you remind us who sits on the technical board? Is it not community people then? Oh. I don't expect a categorical list, but is it mostly Canonical employees?
It is. Mark Shuttleworth, Colin Watson,
Keybook,
got James Remnant,
which isn't Canonical anymore.
True. Martin
Pitt.
Oh, crikey. Okay. And that's about as many as I can remember.
So mainly Canonical people. Yes. So it's
but not completely.
But not completely. Completely.
So there's a little bit of
Now Scott left them. Not completely. Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Well, it's good to see them. You know.
Yeah. And there's a whole load of these got out, been sent out. So that's good to see.
Okay. And then onto the not about Ubuntu.
Yes.
Okay. What's in the not about Ubuntu this time?
OpenSUSE are looking at changing their... we talked about release names and how, you know, everyone seems to be on the release name bandwagon at the moment.
Yeah, and we got lots of people telling us that Fedora's beefy miracle was nothing to do with Ubuntu and their silly naming conventions.
Yes. In fact, we had the beefy miracle himself.
Yes, on Twitter.
Leave a comment on our post time. Yeah, yes. Yeah. I don't see what this has got to do with Ubuntu. Yes.
Mr. Miracle.
Yes, Mr. B. Miracle. Anyway, OpenSUSE... carrying on the trend of changing release names and numbers, they want to relook at how they number their releases. So there's a discussion and a bit about how they number their systems to make it easier to understand.
And they've documented how every other distro numbers there so they can pick which one they choose.
Really?
Which one they think's best, yeah.
I think that's a really well-planned...
It's thorough.
Scheme. It's very thorough.
It's really thorough and comprehensive review.
Mm. Ubuntu-style variation, Mandriva style,
I didn't
Fedora
even know there
style.
Was an Ubuntu-style variation.
Well, I think they're proposing the variation.
The Ubuntu one is yy.mm, isn't it?
Yeah.
The variation they're proposing is to use all four digits of the year and then a dash instead of a dot between the...
Wow, golly. Yeah. Hold the front page.
If you can contain your excitement, check out the webpage. There'll be a link in the show notes. There's also another thing in the Not About Ubuntu, which is Chris Gutteridge from Sotek. Two of us went to the bar camp that Chris and another man called Chris helped run at in Southampton. And he's been linked to in the Register article about... Yeah, exactly, yeah. About his day job, which is at Southampton University, which is about the semantic web and, you know, data and the Tim Berners-Lee thing about... Yeah, the web should be two-directional, not one-directional, read, write, and work out its logic about who's related to what and all that sort of stuff.
Scary.
Sounds like Facebook.
Yeah, I was going to say. No, it sounds like Diaspora, I think you mean.
It's quite explicitly not like Facebook, because one of the things that Tim Berners-Lee says in this article is about, you know, Facebook is a closed, it's walled garden. You can only put data in. You can't take your data out as much, whereas the semantic web would allow you to keep your data wherever you wanted to keep it and own your own data, but still link it with all the other pools of data that are on the web. That is the limit of my knowledge about the semantic web.
The interesting thing I read on Wikipedia the other day is that the Facebook guy, Mark Zuckerberg, actually donated a whole pile of money to Diaspora. because he thinks it's a really cool idea.
Yes.
He's got enough to spare.
Yeah, I know. But still.
Well, okay, yeah, good on him. There you go. Next up.
Alan, I've no idea what this is. You haven't read it up.
Neither have I. I have no idea what this is either.
And it's one of those ones where it does not say what it is in the URL.
Oh, sorry. Red Hat reported their fourth quarter fiscal year 2011 results, and they seem quite good.
Oh, yes. Oh, profits are up for Red Hat.
Yes. Well done. Go to Red Hat.
Well done, Red Hat. Keep.
This is good. This is fantastic, because if Red Hat do well, they carry on employing open source developers who develop stuff, and we take it and package it up for Ubuntu.
Yeah, excellent. Well done, Red Hat.
Ralph Green left us a voicemail about having the installer checkbox selected by default.
Hello, this is Ralph with the Dallas-Fort Worth Unix Users Group. I enjoyed your last show. I want to say it concerns Ubuntu bug 723831. I sure hope they leave the checkbox off so that they don't encourage more people to have insecure, buggy systems. Flash is just too bad to be installed by default. If somebody's has so little concern about security and their system that they want to install it, I guess that's their decision, but I certainly wouldn't want to have encouraged more people to install it by default. The last little comment is I finally figured out from listening to this show why you don't have more women on the show. You require them to be named Laura before you let them come on as a guest. Oh, well. Looking forward to the next show. Have a great day.
This is true.
Thank you.
It is a prerequisite.
Yeah.
It seems to be the case.
Absolutely.
You can read more about the listener perspectives on our website at podcast.ubuntu-uk.org.
Chris Blow emailed us to wonder,
is Mark planning on attending this year's UK Moodle Moot? And if so, is he doing a talk? I shall be attending for the first time.
Congratulations, Mark. You've got a stalker.
Apparently, Mark actually isn't going to be there this year.
Oh, what a shame.
But he says he might submit a paper for next year.
Yeah, so maybe next year.
Yeah, you have to stalk him down there. Kubuntu emailed to say,
what perfect timing, and what better way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day than to listen to the latest Ubuntu UK podcast with guest host Laura C.
Zed
tab. You should make this an annual event. What a great idea. Every St. Patrick's Day will get you over.
Get me over? Yeah, I'm over here now.
She's here now.
No, I meant over to this house.
All right. Okay.
Sorry,
thought you were sending me back.
Studio.
Keep up the illusion to the podcasting caravan.
Ken Fallon emailed to add to our segment about RMS and public speaking.
I got to see RMS speak in the University Auditorium in Eindhoven during the European tour. Their style presentation and much his publicised habit of challenging the questions made sense. I think he is simply a somewhat eccentric professor who is on a mission to challenge his students to think. That form of interaction doesn't translate well to other forums, and Ed Moglen is a far better orator for these places. Even shares the same views as RMS, but manages to convey the messages with eloquence and passion.
That's a fair point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't get feedback with such a strength of feeling as I was expecting following the RMS troll
we did in the last episode. Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't deliberately a troll or anything, but I was sort of expecting... some people with sort of really pro RMS views, maybe.
They wouldn't be listening to this show.
Well, possibly.
Because we put it out in MP3 format.
We do it in OGG as well. I know. We're very clever about these things. It takes us hours.
Andy Piper emailed to comment,
I'm unsure whether I'm surprised about the limited airplay you gave to the Canoe GNOME app indicator gate saga. It's been a big deal in the developer community, if not the user one, and it's really tough for me to stick with Canonical through the whole thing. That's mostly with my developer and community hat on, though, rather than as a user. Interesting stuff, anyway. Remind us what the Canonical GNOME app indicator gate saga is.
It's the whole, does Canonical contribute to GNOME, and what was the process that went around the contribution of specific parts, like the indicator applet.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why we chose not to do it is because everyone else seems to have a much better recall of all of this. And it's all very painfully well documented in other people's blogs. I don't think we could do it justice, really.
Yeah, fair enough.
To be fair.
Well, he's going to comment on those blog posts then, Andy.
Yes. Chris left a comment on our website to ask,
where does the music come from that you use? It is quite catchy and I need to know now. Can you please bring back the FAQ back on the website, which actually details this? Because every week, at least, someone asks on IRC.
Oh.
Did it? I don't remember. Did we have an
FAQ?
Golly.
I don't remember that. Oh, well, okay.
It's called?
It's called Crazy Words, Crazy Tune. The version we have is by the Savoy Orphans Band, which I think was released in about 1929.
So out of copyright.
So nicely out of copyright. And there are several other versions around as well that you can get your hands on if you try hard enough. That's what it's called.
And the music that you play while we're on hold is the same album?
If you're listening to the live stream, the music you hear before or after the show is a similar album. I'm not quite sure it's the same album. Mm. There we go. And finally, the Wing Commander, you might remember from our previous episodes, has sent us some more feedback.
Wing Commander, Sir Arthur Curmudgeon here. I was most gratified to receive a copy of your excellent podcast, Thingamajig, via my nephew's Walkman. But I must say I'm disappointed not to be able to play it on the wind-up gramophone. I even woke up at one point when the chap in the control tower paused to say he was wrestling with a cat. This put me in mind of an incident some years ago when Binky Carstairs and I were foraging in the bush in Kenya, when we were suddenly attacked by a tiger. Came as something as a surprise, as tigers aren't native to Kenya. So there we were, wrestling with the big cat. Binky concluded that tickling it behind the ears wasn't going to work, since it had already ripped one of his legs off. I came up with a novel solution to subdue the beast. I shot it. Unfortunately, the bullet went through the tiger and into Binky Carstairs. Sorry to say, neither the tiger nor Binky were ever the same again. I was going to advise your young chap not to allow cats into the control tower, but my great-nephew decided he was probably wrestling with a particularly complex cat command, in which case he should try the less command, which allows you to scroll up and down a listed file by lines and pages. I think I just had one of my funny turns again. Nurse? Nurse? Anyway, jolly good show, keep up the good work, and if anyone fancies a stuffed tiger to go over the fireplace, look me up on eBay. Yours, the WC.
Okay.
He's bonkers. That was raving bonkers.
That was entertaining.
Literally over a minute and a half.
You'll never have again.
How bizarre. Ooh. That was probably one of the best feedbacks I think we've ever had. I do like to see
that. Oh dear. Really? Yeah. Is that what
it made me laugh.
That's like
it
a challenge for him to send one the next time.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I hope we'll have
a go for it, Wing Commander.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can spare some time from flying planes.
And finally, Matt Daubney from the Ubuntu UK Loco has posted a message asking for feedback on the naming and role of the team leaders or points of contact within the Ubuntu community. He started a whole discussion thread on the mailing list, and we'll put a link in the show notes.
Excellent. And that's all your feedback this time. There we go. That's all for this episode. Although Mark, in his absence, has left us a special message asking for as many people as possible to go to this following URL, which is tinyurl.com/UUPCFortunes. And what you'll find there is a little survey. And what he's going to do is in the next episode, when the four regulars, if you like, are back together, he's going to have another episode of the quiz, and he's going to be the quiz master, and he's going to do family fortunes, but legally different, so UUPC fortunes. So
right.
This is his case of gathering his data. It's all about Ubuntu and free software.
So this is his survey of 100 people.
Yes.
Right.
Although, yeah, give or take a few.
Might have to scale it up a bit.
Or maybe scale down. So go along there, tinyurl.com/UUPCFortunes, and you can answer the survey and find out. And help contribute to the embarrassment that will undoubtedly come our way in the next episode. So, but that is all for this episode. So thank you for listening and downloading, and thank you for listening live if you're doing so. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. Let us know what you think of the show, or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. And you can join us on Tuesday the 12th of April for our next live episode.
8:30 UTC.
And thanks, Laura, for coming down.
Which Laura?
Both of you.
Thank you both for being here. And thank you to Alan Bell for doing sterling work pasting the links from our show notes into the IRC channel. You've done a great job, sir.
Thank you.
So join us again in 2 weeks, 19:30 UTC, 20:30 British Summer Time. Bye-bye.